Welcome to Piercing the Veil on BBSRadio.com, a show for truth seekers and rebels. Join us every week as we obliterate willful ignorance, corruption, globalist agendas, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Pacific, and listen carefully as we provide crucial solutions, information awareness, and unique life hacks to improve our planet. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right, greetings, world. We started a little bit late today, so we're going to run into after the hour. I do not have Corey with me today. It's just me, Jordan, by myself. I have a few guests that should be calling in, hopefully. I think we have one guest on the line that I met earlier in the week. What we're going to do with this show is basically just an open free-for-all discussion. I'll give a consultation, basically free consultation for people's issues like debt collection, medical bills, statist interventions, police state, side of the road stuff, you name it, we'll talk about it. Hell, we'll even get into conspiracies, aliens, life after death, whatever you want to talk about. You guys just give us a call and we'll go from there. The number to call toll free is 888-429-5471. You're going to choose station 2. That'll get you on the queue here and we'll be ready to talk with you after that. So don't be shy. Give us a call. I know a lot of you are listening every week and haven't really contributed yet as far as calling in. So don't be scared about it. Just give us a call. Again, 888-429-5471. Let's fill some of the time here today. I had promised last week that we were going to get Kevin Annette on the show. It turns out he actually has a show on the same radio platform at the same time as we do. So we're going to have to work with that a little bit and see if we can get a pre-recording done and maybe get him on in the next week or so, hopefully. Regardless of that, I do also have a couple other special guests that will be coming on. We'll fit them in or squeeze them in as we can, and I will give you notice when I know more about that. So with all that out of the way and the phone number to call in, we're going to go ahead and go to our first guest. It seems like we have Dory on the phone. And Dory, welcome on to Piercing the Veil Radio. How are you doing?
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on, Jordan.
You're very welcome. We got a little bit of static with your phone there. I know before the show we were trying to work that out. We'll just, listeners, just bear with us, please. And Dory, if you have, I really don't know how we're going to fix this.
It's like, I know.
Just jump right into it. It sounds really bad. Really bad.
Okay.
That sounds better, whatever you just did. Okay, great.
I think I turned my mic up a little bit. Hopefully that will help.
Okay, cool. All right, let's jump right into it. We're going to combobulate ourselves a little bit and come up with a few topics that you might want to talk about. Dory, like I said, this is a consultation show, so since you are the first person to call in, you've got free rein. You can name off whatever you want us to start with. Maybe ask your questions, give a short bio about who you are, what you're doing, plug your companies, whatever you want to do. Like, you just take it away and I'll just fill in the blanks and sort of guide us along the road and answer your questions. How about that?
Okay, fantastic, Jordan. Thank you so much. And you just cut me short anytime my audio gets really bad. I understand. So first of all, I'm Hurricane Dory and I'm the Rebel Healer. And so my background is I'm a traditionally trained nurse who I reformed myself when my eyes were open. And along that path, I've recovered from several chronic diseases and then found my calling deep within that. 20-plus year herbalist, aromatherapist, energy healer, and do all kinds of amazing stuff. I have a hobby farm that is named Ramshackle Farms out here in Lubbock, Texas, and I promote sustainable, organic farming of all kinds. I do not practice medicine. That's my disclaimer, of course. I don't have a license to practice medicine, but I'm a folk medicine master. So I'm not doing anything new. I'm bringing you know, bringing sexy back when it comes to treatment. And so there's nothing new. There's nothing surprising other than I may be one of the only people you'll ever know so far that is completely healed of rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. And I'm not in remission. I'm
Excellent.
Literally healed from it. So, yes, and it took me 5 years to do that on my own. Anyhow, that being said, that kind of prefaces what I'm going to start with. So wanted to ask you, because I love your use of language and your wordsmithing. So first and foremost, going through my own healing process before I realized that my colleagues and peers were really completely against me in the direction I was trying to go and had to disassociate myself with them.
Oh, yeah.
I accumulated a huge amount of medical debt that put a burden on our family that still continues. I mean, this stuff, you know, Jordan, it never, you know, they just keep reporting junk, and even when you try to settle things. And so my gift is in healing. It's not in techie or credit or any of that stuff. So, you know, I don't really know where to go with this. I had a lab company call me up that had a $4,000 bill against me, and they offered to settle for $150, and I agreed. And when I called up to make that payment, they said that that offer was no longer available, and I said that I was no longer available to discuss the matter. And I just left it at that. Of course, that didn't disappear, but it's not, you know, it doesn't bother me. But that's just that's just one of them. So
one of the many. Okay.
Yes.
Well, yeah, so that's an excellent place to start.
Okay.
Excellent place to start is getting rid of medical bills. And you did ask the right person, because that's essentially what I do all day long, is just help people get rid of collections and debts and medical bills. And then some of the deeper stuff I deal with is like CPS and corrupt judges and the FBI and the U.S. Marshals and criminal charges and so on and so forth. And I like you gave a disclaimer. I have to give a disclaimer. I can't represent anybody. I'm not an attorney. I can consult with them. I can write documents for them to use and make their own. I can tell them about my experiences with the court system and the police and being tasered and beaten and essentially mentally raped and emotionally raped in jail by being sprayed with water, stripped down naked, left in a jail cell, freezing cold with no water for about 2 days. All sorts of different things that happened to me, which allowed me to harness the fire or the revolution within my own self of living free, like not living at the whim of somebody else, understanding that rights cannot be given or taken away. Your rights are with you. They're inherent. They're part of you. That's everything that you can do as a right is already there. Now, getting the recognition of you being able to express those rights, or getting the state to recognize that, oh, yeah, you can do that right without being, you know, paying a license or a fee, that's the hard part. With regards to you healing yourself, I just want to sort of slingshot back there. I also had another guest. His name's Johnny Delirious, one of my best friends, and he's just a wonderful guy. Healed himself of all the hepatitises. I think he had A, B, and C somehow, possibly.
Excellent.
So he healed himself completely using mineral balancing techniques and some other things as well. It's a very interesting story, and it correlates with what you said about the natural healing process. So, and then, you know, let's just be honest, every single medicine, well, I shouldn't say every single one, but 99.9% of these medicines are synthesized or originate in some way from the rainforest or a plant or some sort of plant matter or substance. So
yes,
to heal yourself naturally with plants and herbs, yeah, it's ridiculous to think that that's
not
possible. And you,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's me. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jordan. Yeah, you stirred my spirit up just speaking my language. You know, really what was birthed out of my struggle was a fire. I mean, it lit a fire in me. It stirs me up. It spurs me on. It's exciting because. You know, I don't really care what anybody thinks. I'm going to tell the truth. And there's nothing wrong with the truth. It's just been covered up, you know, as your show is so appropriately named. And we have to pierce through these things because, you know, there's nothing new with what we're talking about. All of these medicines are poison, they're counterfeit, and they're magic. And they have bad, bad, negative, low, nasty energy involved in them on every angle.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way, the intent, the purpose behind making these medicines, people need to understand that the root of homeopathy, besides diluting things in water and watching them get stronger the more you dilute it, which is just an amazing fucking thing right there in itself.
True.
But the thing behind homeopathy is the intent. So the intent and the behind the creation or the combining of the substances follows, that energy follows that material or that substance or that healing or that medicine, and it contributes to the energetic body of the person, and the dilution contributes to the physical body of the person. So say you've got a virus or something, they take a bit of that virus, they dilute it in water, they dilute it more, they dilute it more, they do some other things to it. That's a homeopathic preparation right there. Now, what I want to say is what you just touched on, how the pharmaceuticals that are being created, how they're magic and they're nasty and they're toxic. Absolutely. In a physical sense, yes. And then in an energetic sense, that toxicity and that money, 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 and that profit, 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 and all that motivation and intent is part of that pill. It's part of that substance. So not only are you paying $1,000 a pill for cancer pills in some cases, but you're paying for that poison on a physical and an energetic level. So that being said, you've done nothing wrong with switching over. You've done everything right with regards to trying to get all this medical debt out of your life, because that energy of all that is still attached to you in some way, shape, or form. You may have gotten rid of a lot of it, but it's still hanging around there. It's nothing that is interfering, I would say, directly in your life per se, maybe a little financial problem here and there, debt reporting and stuff like that. But it does need to be taken care of, right? Okay, so let's get to that after that little soapbox. yes, so Dory, let's see here. I want to recap and just tell me if I'm wrong. You had a couple thousand dollars, I think $4,000 total that they were saying that you owed for some sort of procedure or medical bill, whatever. They offered you, which is illegal, by the way, they offered you a one-time deal, like, oh, it's only applicable right now. That's called a pay for delete. And they, you can ask for one. They are prohibited from offering you things like that. So the FDCPA, the Collection Practices Act, the FDCPA, along with, what is it here in Texas? Business and Commerce Code, Section 71. Yeah. Those two things right there make certain behaviors or actions of a debt collector unlawful. And even the creditor applies to the creditor. And some of those actions are, tell me if I hit any that they did to you, some of those actions are misrepresenting the true nature, character, or the legal status of the debt. Using cuss words, language, calling at inconvenient times during the day, calling more than three times a day, calling before or after 9 a.m. or p.m. Central, and then also making offers that are time-sensitive to get you to pay right away. So exactly what they did there. They cannot give you a request for delete. They can't say, oh, yeah, we'll delete this if you pay right now. They can't do that. Also, they can't continue to contact you or write you or report negatively on your credit once you've asked them to stop and investigate, basically a validation request. Now, just asking them to cease and desist from contacting you by phone is enough to get them to stop usually. Now, if it goes the other direction and they go harder, right, if they get pissy and they start doing illegal stuff because you asked, hey, stopped contacting me, well, then now you have a statutory violation for every single time that they've called you, if you can prove that you sent them something that said cease and desist. Now, if they fail to investigate after you ask to investigate a debt, it's like, hey, validate this or tell me where this came from or verify this or whatever, they have 5 days. They only have 5 days once they receive your request to send you something that says, hey, we're investigating. And during that time, once they've said, hey, we're investigating, they have 30 days from there. During that time, they cannot report negatively on your credit. They have to hold up and stop and pause it. They cannot continue collecting after you. They can't engage in collection activity of any sort, whether it's written or audio or any of that. And if they do, again, that's a $1,000 violation. So really what I do is I go through the facts. I find with my clients, I find what can we nail them for that's a violation already. And then if the client themselves hasn't requested, hey, don't contact me, or requested a validation, that's the next step that we do. And then almost always, like 8 times out of 10, it pushes them to do illegal shit because they just want to collect on you, right? So when you say, hey, validate, or hey, do this, they go hard and they send you like 3 or 4 letters that are duplicates in a week, and they call you back to back and they just won't leave you alone. Well, then we record all of those instances. We put them on a paper, or we have them recorded, or a call log, or what have you. And at that point, now you've got sufficient leverage to not only get them to drop your debt and wipe it off your credit report, but if you choose to carry it forward, you can sue the shit out of these guys for $1,000 violation per piece. And then also, doesn't it cause you problems? Doesn't it cause you interference with your work? Doesn't it cause you issues with getting credit because they're still reporting negatively on your credit illegally? Doesn't it cause you problems? And I'll let you respond here in a Dory. But doesn't it cause you any emotional distress just thinking about that on your credit and all the stuff you could be doing? And maybe they called you and harassed you. And all that stuff gives an emotional response that produces damages on an emotional level. And those damages are hard to quantify, but if you put it at an hourly basis, I mean, you're looking at, after a typical client interaction, after we've done all this stuff and they harass the client, you're looking at least $15,000-$20,000 in damages for the hours of time. And and so what we basically do is the client then makes the decision, hey, do I just want to get – we send them a settlement offer that says, hey, you motherfuckers, you better like eliminate this debt immediately, wipe it off the credit report like it never existed, and issue an apology letter. Sometimes we don't do the third one. And if they don't do any of those, then we go and we sue them. Like I literally have the client go and sue that person. And I also tell the client, well, hey, you probably want to add their in-house counsel. You want to add their CEO, you want to add their CFO, you want to add all the big top people, because in our previous letters to them requesting a cease and desist or requesting a validation or whatever, I have the client name those people. So they are culpable by the time comes around that they are harassing you and you've already sent all your letters off. Those people are now responsible under something called respondent superior. So that's basically the breakdown of what I do for my clients. It works fantastic. I've had great success. We're at like 8 out of 10 successes right now per client case. The two ones on any of my client cases, 8 out of 10 are successful is what I'm saying. The two that are not, you might run into a shitty judge. You might run into some sort of corruption on a state or a county level, which happens a lot on other like related matters. But when that happens, you can always just transfer venue, you can appeal, you can do all sorts of, you can recuse, you can do all sorts of stuff. But the clients are just like, oh, you know, I don't want to do 4-year court battle when I could just have them wipe off my debt. So they wipe off the debt. They've already paid me my retainer. Everybody's happy. And we go our separate ways. So that in a nutshell, I know that's sort of like we went down a long road there. But that in a nutshell is how I handle my issues, and it's the strongest thing I've seen. It's not like a mere verification or this or threat or that. We actually follow through and we hammer their ass. And I've done this for Chase. I've done this for all the big banks. I've named their $20 million a year attorney as a respondent, and he had to go get an attorney, and the Chase had to go get another attorney besides their attorney they usually use on staff that's already paid for. So these guys are incurring so much expense right off the bat. When you come and say, hey, we want to settle and just get this done, they jump at the bit every time. So that's basically the explanation there. Dory, I want to get your input, your questions, your understanding. Just let you talk for a while, and I'll jump in when it feels right.
Thanks so much, Jordan. I love that because you hit so many things. Excuse me. You hit so many things perfectly. With my current situation with a lot of these medical bills. And I just use that $4,000 one because they're not the only people that offered me, the $150 settlement. And then the thing they don't realize is that I come from their side of things. So I know how much things really cost and then what hospital charge and how fraudulent everything is. And when they find out that I'm talking about, they get very quiet. But I speak honestly with them as well. So you answered so many fantastic questions about the medical stuff, and you also answered a lot of questions for me. I do not have any student loans, but my husband does. And the other part that I left out is, well, I won't go there yet. We'll go there in a minute because we'll have to go further with this fraud because it's good. But the student loan, they've already violated, my gosh, how many things? I don't know. Time-sensitive offers, you know, I mean, off the chain. They call before 9 a.m. and, I mean, right up, you know, every day. They called this morning. And I do have arrangements and have a good payment record with them and everything. But part of going through my own chronic illness, this is the part I left out. So the one thing that I'm still clearing from my life, I never say I'm sick, by the way. I'm clearing things from my life. And one of the things I'm clearing is neuro Lyme disease. And I've had it so long, and I kind of talked to you just for a second before the show about the blood bank, but that's going to be one I think that it might be our divine connection, really, because it's interesting. So I got a blood transfusion 2005. I had a baby that I lost halfway through a pregnancy, and then I proceeded to get ready to cross over. It was peaceful. We can talk about that if you want. It's awesome. My husband looked at me in the eyes and said, "Don't leave." And I said, "I won't leave you." And I came back. I got a blood transfusion. Mm-hmm. It saved my life. By the way, I've given many blood transfusions over my years as a nurse. I was a Parkland nurse. Hoorah. And I never regret that because I was in labor and delivery. And I can't work anywhere in the hospital in good conscience anymore unless it's the ER because we're good at trauma and good. I'd be happy to stabilize you. Or in a nursing home where I can take all of our wonderful elderly people off of their poison medicine on a weekend shift when there's no administration there. Those are the only two places in the hospital I can work in good conscience, just to give you a heads up. So so I got that blood transfusion, Jordan. I lost half my blood volume, and they gave me enough. I only consented to 2 packed units of red blood cells. Saved my life, and it changed my life. And I walked through a door. And when I turned around to see where the door was, it was gone because I came away with every known disease except AIDS and hepatitis, every known disease. In fact, it turned on all the autoimmune stuff in my body. I have such bizarre autoimmune stuff that kind of plagued me for a long time until I learned how to walk through it and not ask stupid questions like, why is this happening? Instead, how do I walk through, you know? I don't mean that in an unkind way about stupid questions.
Let me ask just points of clarification here. So the pregnancy issues, halfway through the pregnancy, you had problems that were life-threatening. You basically were on the brink. You could feel yourself leaving at the request of your husband. You did stick around. And then the way that you stuck around was they gave you a blood transfusion, and let me just see if I have this right. That blood transfusion was somehow saved your life, but was tainted, perhaps?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And did they have you sign anything in the moment to accept or acknowledge or authorize the blood transfusion?
I had to verbally because I was literally out of my mind because I had such big, you know, hypoxia. I had no oxygen to the brain. And so my husband had, you know, power of attorney over me, of course, and so he consented. But
That muddies the waters a little bit.
Yeah.
It muddies the waters a little bit because if it was you and they – see, that's a moral dilemma because, you know, you should have somebody else if you're not in a legal mind state or capable mind state to contract, you should have somebody else that you trust do it. But if that somebody else makes a mistake, you can't come back and claim, oh, I wasn't in the legal capacity to make that agreement. Well, you were because of the POA. So that is, we could sort of work around that. But what you still can make a case for is negligence, is that you trusted and relied on the professionalism and competence of the people to only provide you with stuff that would save your life and make you better. If you had known that there was a risk, if you had been informed that there was a risk of bloodborne disease transfer, or had been informed some way like, hey, we didn't really screen this, we don't really screen these fucking things, it's just emergencies, so here you go. If you had known about that, you probably would have died, right? You would have just made the choice to go.
You know, I don't know if I would have died, Jordan, but I tell you, I wasn't refusing for religious purposes or anything. I was simply refusing as a trained licensed nurse in the state of Texas and Hawaii and Arkansas and a few other states as well. And before that, I was a paramedic, and before that, I was a surgical technologist. So I go back to healthcare all the way to 1985 before people even wore gloves and washed their hands properly, honestly, and the nurses.
Well, you know what
the nurses.
But the deal was.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I knew
you know what, the deal
what was,
was
going on. But I did not know, yeah, like when I went to have my last baby at the hospital, he was almost 10 pounds. I cleaned my own labor bed because I know what kind of infections lurk, right? You know, I'm the one that walked in the hospital and said, give me all the stuff. I got to clean my room so I can have the baby. You know,
I picked up MSRA staff that almost killed me from the hospital, and I got rid of it through herbs from China, literally picked off the mountains in China, crushed down into powder, mixed with fresh spring water, and shipped from China over here, and it saved my fucking life. So
excellent.
I've had a number of those types of things. So I understand how it is in the moment. It sounds like you did what you had to do, but there still could be a case made possibly for negligence and criminal negligence. Now, as far as the health issue. Oh, I was going to say, so we covered sort of like a possible, and we'd have to do this off the air, you know, for personal reasons and for just time constraints.
Yeah.
But we would cover in depth more of the facts on surrounding that incident and see if we could make some sort of case or claim at least for negligence, send that off to those guys and say, hey, look, this is what's happened. This is how I've been damaged. Here's all the proof of my medical expenses or holistic expenses after the fact of me trying to fucking cure myself and clean my blood, and you know it's cost me this much in actual damages or actual cost, and oh by the way, this is what it's done to me and my mental anguish and my emotional damages. You know, I could take this to court and you guys could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars defending it because I'm going to take it all the way to the top because it's that important to me, or you guys can send me an apology letter that I will agree not to publish. It'll just be for my own personal edification, an apology letter that says, hey, sorry, we are bad. And, oh, by the way, send me a check for yada, 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 however much it ends up being. And it would be a lower amount than what you're actually claiming for. And if they take that and they go, yeah, you know, we don't have to, you know, here's a settlement and release paper that comes along with this lady's settlement offer. It says that we're admitting no liability. It says that she can't share this publicly. It says that we only have to do this check and this. Yeah, they will more than likely send you something, or you have the choice to go to court at that point. So you do have a viable claim of some sort. I don't know if you have a complete lawsuit yet, but you can at least make a claim and you know, ask for what you want. You never know unless you ask. What do you think about that? Does that sound like something up your alley that you would sort of look to pursue?
Yeah, it really does, and that's kind of, you know, what I felt in my gut. Like, I've never pursued anything in that direction because I've just kind of processed it and gone. I really grieved it, Jordan, the whole thing because of what I lost. It was a true grieving process and just releasing any kind of junk and unforgiveness and all kinds of stuff, you know. But I don't think it happened to me, you know, just so I could sue them. We're talking about the blood banks on that level.
Yeah.
They do not test the blood. They don't test it. And here's the sick part. All of that is donation. And look at how much they charge for the blood. They have every bit of ability to pay for UV light to clean that blood every time it's donated.
Of course.
And they don't do it.
Of course. And the UV cleans up like everything.
Everything.
The UV light
everything.
On the blood will clean up everything. It'll supercharge the blood, by the way.
Yes.
And so
I've even done that treatment on myself at home, you know, auto infusion through the ozone and the UV. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's easy. And they don't do it. So anyway, I digress.
See, there you go. No, you don't digress. Well, you did digress a little bit, but you like hit the nail right on the target or the bullseye. Because if they have the ability, if they have the funds, and they have the technology available to them, and it's reasonable and cost effective, and they are not doing that right there is big time negligence. Now, where it becomes criminal is where they are making a profit, even if they're a nonprofit, even if the blood bank center is a nonprofit, somebody's making a profit off of it. So what I'm saying is whoever those entities are, after the fact, if they have not given disclosure to the person, like, hey, we don't screen this, we don't test this blood, but here you go, you know, why don't you take a couple quarts? That right there, then it becomes criminal because they whether intentional or unintentional, have infected you with a number of different autoimmune diseases and things like that. Now, okay, so we're in stages here. Stage one was, what are the legal claims? Stage two is, what the fuck did they actually do to you, and how are they wrong about doing it, right? Which is what you just said. They had the ability, they had the means, they had the motive, or they had the potential motive, which is safety, and they had something else. So now what was your claim could be turned into a class action claim if you like. And the thing about class actions is this. They're bullshit if you hire an attorney. Do you know why they're bullshit if you hire an attorney? Because he takes all the plaintiff's money, gives you like a tiny, tiny percentage, and then anybody else besides the primary plaintiff who joins that action gets like 20 fucking cents. They get a 20 cent check in the mail. No joke. Yeah. I've gotten one of these.
I did about a blank
year. Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Dory. If you do it yourself, if you're the one doing it yourself, all that money goes to you, and you get to choose how much you want to do for everybody else. Or you can just file a suit yourself on behalf of all similarly related persons, and you can get an injunction, which basically means you can stop all of their business right off the bat. Now, you're going to have to come with some moral equations to this. Well, yeah, so is it better that people die because they can't get access to their blood transfusions because I've somehow sued this people and stopped them temporarily from giving any type of blood transfusion that's not screened? Or is it better that 100,000 more people over the course of 5 years don't die or don't get infected somehow with a disease that will eventually kill them when they were trying to save their lives in the first place by getting a fucking blood transfusion? So how do you balance that, right? You just basically have to take a look at what you think the karmic repercussions will be, and true karma, not fake karma, which we talk about on our show, but what would the true karmic repercussions be for those people that may die for lack of an immediate blood transfusion right now? And you would say, okay, well, are there other options for them to get blood transfusions from other people that may actually do these screenings? Yeah, possibly. It's few and far between. So at the end of the day, do I feel comfortable enough to go, okay, I'm going to give a little energy to whoever is affected by this in return for me getting to sue right away? And if that is something that comes to you and it's like, okay, yes, I want to do that, then you can do that. And this is how every single major decision that affects somebody else should be done. I shouldn't shit on everybody. Nobody likes to be shit on. How I would do it and how I do it in my life. I actually look at the long term, the short term. I put them together and I balance everything out. And it's either a positive sum game or a negative sum game. If it's positive, I go, yep, I was on the right idea. I'm going to go ahead and do this action. If it's negative, I go, well, I could do this action anyways. Do I still want to do it? Yes or no. Or no, I don't want to do that. Does it make sense? All that long, drawn out stuff, the details that I just gave?
No, I think it's great. It makes so much sense. And I didn't, I really hadn't thought of doing that on my own. I thought I needed, a major ambulance chaser. And I have a couple that I know. I went to high school with a really well known one there in DFW that I could hire. But, I love what you said that I could do it myself because, people that are in healing ministry and living your calling, what do we really want to do? We want to reach everybody who wants to heal. You know how much I could do with a lawsuit win? For all these people that need help. I mean, it's sad. It's just sad.
And Dory, let me say this too. It doesn't require that you necessarily ask for money. Now, it would be nice and you probably want to include it, but you could at the very least, you could just like sue to stop these people or sue to force them to change their procedures or sue to force them to start using these UV screenings. And if you can prove that it's cost effective and it's available and the risk to the public is larger than the reward to these companies for keeping their profits and not having to spend on these safety technologies, well, then you're going to get an order from the judge all day long. And in the small case that you don't, somehow the judge is corrupt or he's bought out by big interest, which happens to me in our bank cases all the time. You do some research. You can see where the payments are coming from to that judge from the county. You can see that that judge has a bias based on the payments he's receiving from the county or whatever. And then you can say, oh, well, judge, I'm suing a bank. You receive $50,000 a year as a bonus vacation for going to talk about bank laws at this meeting at Bank of America every year. So that's a pretty big fucking conflict of interest. You didn't disclose that, so I'm recusing your ass. Get the fuck out of here. You're fired. Thank you. Bye-bye. Somebody else steps in, the next judge, and even if that judge is corrupt, he goes, oh shit, that person just disqualified that judge from ever holding public office ever again. Whoops, maybe I shouldn't fuck with this lady. And so even if that second judge is corrupt, guess what they do? And you're not like influencing the case per se, you're basically influencing them to do what they should have done in the first place, which is be a neutral party. Okay, so that's what they do. They become a referee instead of practicing law from the bench, which is what you're going to see in every other case. The judge will make his decisions, and based on his opinion, whether he likes the pro se party or he likes the attorneys better, which is always the attorneys, or if he thinks that you shouldn't have the right to come in here without an attorney and blah, 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 blah. Excuse me, judge, keep your fucking shit to yourself. That's your personal opinion. I'm entitled to a fair hearing by somebody who is impartial, and you are not being impartial. You're showing bias. I'll give you one more shot, and if you say one more thing like I just heard you say, I'm taking it as your agreement to recuse yourself immediately. Do you understand what I just told you? I say this shit. I'll talk to them like this. When I go to court, I talk to them like this. You work for me. Last time I checked, every single person in here is a public servant holding public office who is required to abide by public rules. Myself, I'm a private citizen entitled to free and unfettered access to the courts and a fair and unbiased hearing. So if you're going to tell me to be quiet again, I'm going to take it as you restricting me from talking, and I'm going to ask that you recuse yourself immediately. Did you hear what I said? Do you understand? Yes, sir, and they move on. Or thank you, Mr. Askew, and they move on, right? I've said this, and they look and they just confess and avoid, which is they move on and they act like it never happened. But then they do what you ask them to do. So all that I've said to give you an idea, Dory, that yes, it is possible. It's completely possible to do cases on your own. I see people win all day long. I help people win all day long. Do we lose a couple times, those 2 times out of 10? Yes, we do. But it's based on corruption. It's not based on anything we've done wrong. Literally, I've had these people write exactly the same way, exactly the same procedure, exactly the same things that a lawyer would say at the right time to say them, with the right magic words to get to be able to say it. May it please the court, Your Honor, at this time I would like to present such and such as Exhibit A and blah, 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 right? But because these people are not an attorney and the judge is biased, he will 9 times out of 10 rule against something that you've done that the attorney has actually exactly mirrored the same thing with his argument and done the exact same way, and he'll go, oh, yeah, I rule in favor of this guy, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't know how to ask them to reconsider, if you don't know how to call out their bias as a pro se party, you're basically powerless. But if you do, it catches them with their pants down. They're like, they never expect it. They never saw that shit coming from a private citizen or pro se party that they thought doesn't know the law. And when you start spouting the law, they sit up. Like, they literally sit up straight and they go, oh shit, I've got to actually be on my toes now. And then the last thing, Dorian, I'll let you speak after this. The last thing that I notice is fucking senility. Just total, like, incompetence and senility. Some of these judges are so fucking old, and even the clerks, like, we don't even know why this guy's still on the bench, but nobody dares tell him to get off the bench, right? Even the other judges are like, oh yeah, don't fuck with him, just let him continue putting people, you know, locking people up, even though the prosecutor had to be like, hey, don't give this guy the maximum, he just committed a $50 theft. Judge, this is not the, you know, the murder case you were working on 5 minutes ago. Oh, it's not? Oh, okay. And then the judge asks again, okay, so what's the maximum penalty? And the prosecutor's like, oh, yeah, judge, remember? We just went over this. That's when you got to get the fuck out of there or get the recusal thing going on. So there's a lot of things that could go wrong, but when everything goes right, it feels so great to win and to not only get money, but to get things done, to get these people forced to do something by court order. And I'll tell you this before I let you jump it back in. everything that these Patriot and these Freeman guys and the rah, 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 I am the living man standing on the land, and I am not the straw man and the capitalist demutia name that's all capital letter, blah, blah, blah. It's like the judge doesn't give a fuck about that, man. All he cares about is, did you bring me something that I can order on? And if I do order on this, is it going to be effective? And if you can get an order from a judge saying, hey, this is the sole beneficiary of this estate, this is the only person that has the rights to transact business for this estate, if you can sort of be colorable and bring your petition or bring your case in such a way that you can get control over the straw man or get it declared or decreed by a judge, like, hey, yeah, this guy has these rights, titles, and duties, this guy has this position, he is entitled to this, this, and this. If anybody fucks with him on this, he's entitled to damages. If you have that from the beginning and you get pulled over, or you have that from the beginning and you go to jail on a bullshit charge, or you have that from the beginning and somebody fucks with you in a civil matter, guess what you've got? You've got your enforcement right off the bat. You can go in and file a suit and put that as an exhibit, this order, and they have to take notice of it. There's no more dismissing your lawsuit because the plaintiff has failed to state facts upon which relief can be granted. They have all these little fucking loopholes and case laws that came out right around 2008 that totally makes it easy for anybody to destroy a plaintiff's case. Even if the plaintiff was 100% correct and he proved all his facts, there's still a chance that the defendants can get it dismissed based on saying, oh, they failed to state a claim and they just gave conclusory allegations and blah, 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 right? So long story short, there's a lot of pitfalls you can fall into, but when you do it right as a pro se party, they have nowhere to go. They cannot escape you, and if you get your enforcement right up front, then you will always win. So that being said, is there anything else that you want to jump into, maybe talk about your death experience, talk about some healing that you've done? Maybe we can chat a little bit about how to clean your blood further, because I just helped one of my other clients who had blood cancer. Now she's cured of blood cancer, and all her tests are negative, and that happened within a period of 30 days using dandelion root, CBD oil, and something else that I recommended to her. So, again, I can't provide medical advice, but I know what I'm doing. You know what you're doing. You know, let's chat about that. Go ahead.
Exactly. I wanted to finish up finances, just like three sentences, if that's okay with you. And then can we jump into some near-death and healing? Okay.
Yeah, you take it away. Go ahead.
The other thing, you know, and you were talking and touching on this before, and it really speaks to me, and it's a lot of energy work, and I'm talking about spiritual energy in the spirit realm, is dealing with unethical debt collectors, and I'm dealing with that with my husband. Student loans, I was telling you, and they have violated every which thing that you even said. Could you just briefly give me like a quick, where would I start to, because you know the layers of all that, where would I start to neutralize all their venom so we could make some kind of agreement?
Yeah. So let me preface that by saying this. Out of everything I've ever dealt with, and let me tell you this, I've been charged with 5 felonies for traveling with no license. I did it for a year in my car. I did it on my motorcycle. I drove from Texas recently on my motorcycle all the way, or traveled, I should say, all the way from Texas over Monarch Pass in Colorado. I literally almost died 8 times on that fucking Rocky Mountain Pass, Monarch Pass, which is, it lets you come from eastern Colorado up over to western Colorado. I rode all the way to Grand Junction. I did a seminar with one of my mentors and a great man. His name's Jonah Bay. You should definitely check him out if you ever want the keys to the kingdom for like freedom stuff and things like that. Well, on the way back from that seminar, how funny, right? On the way back from that freedom seminar, I get pulled over. They lock me. They totally just railroad me. Don't listen to anything. Don't look at my paperwork, my trust documents, nothing. And guess what they told me? Said if any of this stuff would have been notarized, because I didn't want to use a notary, they said if any of this stuff would have been notarized, we would have recognized it, we would have let you on your way. I had the fucking CHP officer tell me that. He's like, but because it was a notarized, I had to call the local police sergeant, and he came down here, and that was the guy that came to the side of the road and immediately was down my throat. Are you a free man, and you're blah, 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 blah. Took me to jail, charged me with 5 fucking felonies, fictitious plates, failure to this, blah, 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 all that shit. I got myself out. They told me, oh, the judge, I'm getting to your point, I promise, but I want you to hear the story. They told me, the judge is gone and the visiting judge is on vacation. So if you don't bail out, you're going to be here for a week and a half, 2 weeks before you get to go to the judge, which is usually how I handle my shit. I go to before the arraignment judge and I say, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to say my secret techniques, but I do my thing and they'll ignore me, but they'll pretend to ignore me. And then 2 days later, I'm out with no charges because they watch me and see what I do. If I accept benefits or if my resolve is strong, they have the people watch me. So what they basically said was, oh, we've got your bike and the guy's going to basically take it and it'll be forfeited, your motorcycle, and you'll be stranded here in Colorado if you don't get it out within 3 days. Well, how the hell am I going to do that if I'm in jail? So I got some money. I bailed out, which I don't typically do, right? This is how they force you to do this shit. I bailed out. I went to court. I said my shit, did my stuff. The judge recognized me as a man. There was like 100 other people he called a defendant in front of me. When it got to me, called me a man. The people didn't object to me leaving the state. They're like, do you object to this man instead of this defendant leaving the state? And they shook their heads. The judge is reading the felony charges to me. I'm pouring water over my microphone or into my glass by the microphone. So all you can hear on the transcript while he's reading the charges is I'm drinking water, kicked back with my leg up. My body language is like I'm like fucking watching a movie or I'm like lounging on the beach basically. And the prosecutors are looking at me in my body language to see if they can get a deal. I fly back to Texas, and by the time I get back to Texas, there's a letter in my fucking mailbox that says, we've dropped all your felonies, and we've reduced them to Class C misdemeanors. Well, I bought that case using a financial instrument. I bought the case out because it's a constructive trust. I reported my acquisition of that case on a 1099-A to the IRS. And I bought that case, and I made them liable as the borrower for repayment of those debts. And guess what? The case disappeared offline for about 2 years. And then they tried to bring it back up, and I'm working on it right now. But it disappeared. It was completely gone. I've been pulled over multiple times since then. So you originally asked – let's see, what was it? And I told the story for a reason. But you originally asked I lost it for a second. You asked something about how do we hold them accountable.
I was asking, like, what would be my starting point to begin to...
There you go.
Just calm them the heck down so that we can figure out some kind of arrangement of some kind because they are off the chain and they've violated every single thing you said and I could get my cell phone records or whatever I needed to do. Go ahead.
Yes, it's not often I forget my train of thought, but I'm running on a little bit of sleep here. So, yes, what I told that story for basically was to let you know that they charge for student loans and for traffic tickets. The two things that they charge for and will not let go of, by they I mean companies and or municipalities, the two things they will not let go of are student loans and traffic tickets. Those are And it's easier, I told the story that I did to tell you guys and show you that it's easier to get criminal felony charges dropped than it is typically to get a student loan debt wiped out in a typical manner. Now, I wanted you to know that. That's why I told the whole story of what I had to go through. And all that I had to go through was easier than some of the student loan cases that I've had to work on. Okay?
Wow.
And some of the traffic ticket stuff that I had to work on. Well, why is that, Jordan? Well, Dory and other listeners, it's because the main crux of the interest payments that are being paid on the fraudulent Federal Reserve national debt, the trillion-dollar debt that's growing every day, the interest payments to keep us solvent come from all of the traffic tickets. They're issuing bonds off these traffic tickets, and they go into comprehensive annual financial reports, which are huge trillion-dollar surplus funds of money in each state. And so while the states are like, oh, we have no money to pay, we need to balance our budget, and we need to this and blah, 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 and elect me because I'll fix the budget. Well, nobody's fucking talking about those trillions of dollars of money that are being collateralized. So those funds are then pulled together into like quadrillion dollar funds, and it goes in the special trading platforms and reinsured by the government. So that they can then issue stocks and bonds and T-bills and treasury bills and all these things that you're buying from the government in a stock form or bond form, for the most part, is a reinsured or mortgage-backed type or asset-backed type of traffic ticket or criminal charge or this or that or student loan. Now, because so many people are – the court systems are so jacked up when it comes to prisons being overfilled and whatnot, they've really shifted their focus on the student loans and the traffic tickets. So thereby, you have the original statement that I made, which is the hardest things to get rid of now in today's day and age are fucking traffic tickets and student loans. And what when I say the hardest things to get rid of, it's only if they haven't committed a crime or a violation. Now, with your case, if they've committed a crime or violation, let's go to your steps. What do? Step one, you look up the FDCPA violations, you look up your state consumer statutes, and you find everything that that debt collector has violated. That's step one. You check it off the list. Called me before 9 a.m.? Check. Called me more than 3 times a day? Check. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? Then once you've done that and you've got all your violations, then you go, how can I prove each one of these violations? Oh, well, they called me here and I can go get my phone records. Boom, that one's proven. Or they sent me this letter 3 times in a week and the dates are on the letters, so I just take these letters and put them together as a record. Boom, I can prove that one. So on and so forth. So to recap, your first step is to find what violations according to which laws that are applicable. And it just takes some research and I can help you with that. What is that? And once you find that laundry list of violations, because it's going to be very long, more than likely, then you go into how can I prove those. And then once you can prove those, then you go into making a settlement offer. And you say, hey, guys, I'm writing you about this debt, about this account, this alleged debt. I'm saying that, this stuff here is illegal that you've done. Here's the proof. You know, I've got records to prove it. And each one of these is a statutory violation of $1,000. So if I total up all your violations, it's like 3 times the amount of the debt that you're supposedly asking me for. So already just with the violations that I know I will get, by the way, if you can prove the record in court of a consumer violation, it's an automatic statutory $1,000 violation. It's automatic $1,000 per violation. You don't have to prove that you were damaged. You don't have to prove that you cried about it. You don't have to prove that they butt hurt you. None of that shit. I'm telling you that if you can prove that they did something that they were not allowed to do in a consumer case, it's prima facie, which means self-evident. It's just there. The court will have to issue these charges if you prevail. And so just using that as leverage is powerful. But then if you come behind it and say, oh, by the way, guys, you thought that was bad enough. Guess what? You've damaged me mentally. You've damaged me in my relationships. You've damaged me by sending this to my family member. You've damaged me by calling my work here, my financial and work business reputation. You've damaged me by preventing me from getting a financial credit because you've reported negatively an error on my credit report, blah, 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 blah. And so in addition to the $70,000 of violations, you know, let's just make it a small number. In addition to the $5,000 of violations, I also have $70,000 in emotional damages. You're asking me for $45,000 in student loans. Well, guess what? If I were to sue you, you would owe me more money, you understand, than what you're asking for. And you would have to engage your lawyers and your this and your that and spend at least, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 in legal fees. And oh, by the way, guys, you can't get that free from an in-house salaried lawyer because I fucking named that lawyer and I named the CEOs and everything in this letter. So how you respond to this letter, guys, is going to determine whether or not you guys walk away scot-free and I walk away with a clear debt, or you get the shit sued out of you and I walk away with money and a clear debt. Okay. And like I said, 8 times out of 10, they'll come back. Our ratios are pretty similar. But 8 times out of 10, they'll come back and they'll give you an offer. And they'll say, oh, well, you know, we won't pay you any of your damages that you're asking for. But we'll go ahead, you know, we'll wipe this debt out and we'll take it off your credit report. And you'll say, no, here's my counteroffer. You know, at least pay me $2,000. Otherwise, I'll see you in court. And typically, and if you provide them with a settlement and release that they can have their attorney or their contracting party, they can just sign it right then, they'll send you a check and they'll wipe out your debt. Or if you've taken the previous thing, they'll just wipe out your debt. And the 2 times out of 10 that they don't play ball, guess what happens? We sue the fuck out of them. They get served. The attorney gets served. Their directors get served. And what do they do now? They go, oh, shit, now we got to hire an attorney. And we automatically right off the bat have to spend $5,000. Right? So then they come to you and they'll either fight it out or they'll settle. And that's what you can expect in pretty much any type of debt case that I would take you through myself, at least. So let's jump back to you now that we've answered the financial stuff. Is there any other questions you had about that? Do you want to chat about that a bit or just anywhere that you want to go? We've got 5 minutes left, something like that.
Okay. Thanks so much for that, Jordan. I did successfully have some wrongful stuff removed from my own credit years and years ago, and it was just because I kept good records. Totally false claims, like stupid crap where they said I didn't return cable equipment and I happened to have kept that receipt, you know, moving all over the place and mm-hmm. almost kept me from getting a house one time. I mean, stupid stuff, and, you know, thank goodness I had the receipt from returning stuff like that. But I really appreciate you just giving me the first steps to go with, because I can actually do those and have a
yes.
starting place.
Yeah. It turned out to be a really good episode. I know we got a late start, listeners. I really appreciate your patience there. We had a little bit of audio stuff. It seems like it's sort of okay now. Hopefully you can hear everything that Dory's saying. I hear you, at least, Dory, and I heard everything you're saying. I hope you listeners learned a lot from what we were talking about. It is possible to heal yourself from disease. It is possible to hold people accountable without a lawyer. It is possible to win money and get your credit report wiped out. It is totally possible, and I've done it more than once. And I'll just leave you with this as inspiration, listeners and Dory as well. And we'll let you close out, Dory, after this. But with regards to medical bills, it's interesting. That's what we started with. We'll come back to it. I had $30,000 in medical bills, which is total bullshit padding. Like, it doesn't cost $30,000 to do what they did. Essentially, I had my hand cut open a little bit accidentally. And I went in there and got it. I basically wrapped it up myself, drove myself to the hospital, and got it stitched up, yada, 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 cleaned, all that stuff. And they discharged me. I was like, all right, you know, just send me a bill. I can't really pay right now. Send me a bill. And so they sent me a bill, and it was $30,000-something. And I was like, okay, well, fuck this. I'm contesting this. So I sent them a letter. It says, I'm contesting this. I need you to validate where these charges came from, because this is total bullshit. It doesn't cost $30,000 to sew somebody's hand up. And I know this because last time I got another part of me sewn up that was larger, it took a longer time, and it was only $5,000, right? So I was like, this is bullshit. I know it's bullshit. Come on, guys. Just validate this. They didn't validate. They continued to harass me, yada, yada, yada. Well, I have a little trick that anybody can use, and hopefully everybody's listening right now. If you send them, you're going to have to send it to them by mail. If you send them on time, there's a trick, it has to be on time, a penny. If you send a fucking penny, or if you want to be nice, send them a dime, every month for that account that's supposedly a debt, you send them a penny or a dime or a dollar, any amount every month on time, they cannot report negatively as if you've missed a payment. Can't do it. And if they do, it's against the law. They have to record that you've paid a partial payment. And typically they won't do that. But here's the thing. After 6 months of sending a penny as a payment, they typically just drop the fucking debt, because they understand that by the time they get paid, it's going to cost them 10 times as much to collect that. So they'll just send it off to a third-party collector. Then you keep paying that third-party collector a penny after you ask them to validate. Well, at a certain point, if you ever want to handle this shit, you can show that you've made payments this whole time, and so them reporting on your credit was an error automatically right off the bat. You can also show that they were a participant in their own economic loss, because you said, as long as you guys haven't validated, I'm only going to pay you a penny, but if you validate, I'll pay you the whole amount. Do they ever validate? No, they don't, because they can't ever send you the original document. They can't ever send you the original loan paper. They can't ever send you the original mortgage. They can't do it. They can't, and they won't. I fucking challenge anybody to show me where they've validated a debt and it's been returned with an original document. You will not find it. It doesn't happen. It cannot happen. Why, Jordan? Because they have hypothecated that instrument. They have already sold it and been paid on your debt. It has been sold in many cases, many times, more than once. So they're double dipping by asking you to pay. I'm talking electricity bill, auto loan, mortgage, medical bills, doesn't matter what it is. It's a fraud from the beginning. It is fraud. They are usufructing your estate, and until you put a stop to it, it's just going to continue to happen. Now, with the penny payment thing, what I did is I actually called these fucking people up at one point, and I was like, I'd like to pay this off if you guys will delete, you know, request for delete, but I need you to validate first. And I knew what they were going to do. I was trapping them. They're like, well, if you pay it today, we'll request for delete. Boom, I got you on a statutory violation, you fucker. And so then I said, hey, well, it's illegal for you to put a time frame on the end of that offer. You know that, right? She goes, that's not what I was saying. I said, no, that is what you're saying. Let me talk to your supervisor. I'll wait. Okay. I go to the supervisor. I tell the supervisor. They are like, oh, well, that's not what she said. I said, were you in the room? Were you there? Were you standing right next to her when she said it? No, I wasn't. Okay, so don't tell me things that you don't have firsthand knowledge of, or you're calling me a liar. I know what I heard. My memory is impeccable. Don't fuck with me like that. Now, your employee, who you are responsible for, who the burden of liability falls upon you for this in your company and for me as a consumer, your employee did an illegal action. She told me that I could do this on this day, which is illegal according to this law. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to handle that? You guys make a regular practice of this? Because I just might have to sue you. Well, you know, sir, what do you really want? And I said, what do you think I want? If you guys validate this debt, I'll pay it for you completely, I promise. Right? And so, I went back and forth. I was like, all right, let me talk to your supervisor. Because part of my success is never dealing with peons, never arguing with peons, always asking for the top person. And when you get closer to the top, they'll make excuses. Oh, well, he's in a meeting right now. I said, great. I have meetings all the time. They typically last anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes, maybe an hour. I tell you what, I'm willing to wait. And if you hang up on me while I am holding, I'll take it as if you're admitting guilt for your employee's infraction, and I'm going to hold you accountable, and I'm going to report this to your CEO, to your corporate office, and I'm going to name you personally in this department and your employee ID that you gave me. Well, you know, you can wait if you want. I said, I just said I would do that. Thanks. I'll wait. Go ahead. Scurry on. Get him. I'm an asshole like that because they're an asshole to me. So, you know, click over. I'm listening to music for about 2 minutes. All of a sudden, their manager comes on. I said, oh, that was a mighty fine, quick meeting. I'm glad that went fast for you. Have you been briefed on the situation? Well, yes, they told me a little bit about what's going on. So I repeated myself. I said, are you aware that your company, or at least this employee, makes a practice of offering illegal offers to consumers, and that each one of those is a $1,000 violation and represents significant other damages to me? Do you understand? Oh, blah, blah, blah. What do you really want? I said, well, at this point, I want you guys to fucking delete the debt and wipe it out as if it never existed, because I've offered to pay you multiple times, many times before I even called, and you failed to do so. So I'm going to hold you responsible, the person below you responsible, and that employee responsible, and I will name you personally, including your general counsel, if you fail to acquiesce to my request as we're talking on the phone today. Do you understand? I understand that you just want to get a free debt. No, I understand that you guys have failed where you had a duty to perform lawfully multiple times. It's infringed and caused me trouble, including having to waste my fucking time calling you. So I'm going to tell you one more time. You either wipe this debt out as we're on the phone here today, because I know that all it takes is a few clicks of your computer for you to wipe this entry out and stop reporting to the CRA companies. So you either do that, or I'm going to hang up this phone and I'll see you in court. Do you understand? Guess what happened? Something that everybody says is impossible. $30,000 of medical debt was taken off of my credit report the next day. They didn't even wait 30 days. They fucking took that shit off. They called up the CRA companies. That was gone the next day, which is almost impossible. And I did it over the phone.
By holding
accountability. And it can be done by anybody who's willing to do it. It does not take a lawyer. Okay? All right, so we're running a little bit over a little bit. Dory, I want to give you a chance as a thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I mean, it was just me by myself. I usually fly solo all the time. I can fill in the space, but this was a wonderful interaction. Hopefully the listeners learned something. You got yourself a pretty big free consultation that's worth at least $350 in most cases. And, you know, is there anything that you want to drop and plug or leave any links like you did at the beginning before we drop this show?
Just thank you so much for taking the time and responding to me and being authentic and interacting. Just, you know, I'm just somebody and you respond to me immediately, and I really appreciate everything that you give and do. You can find me. I took your advice and I got on CNIT. So
yes.
I'm on CNIT at Hurricane Dory. And we had a little miniature hurricane in West Texas last night, and I just put my first post on if anybody wants to check it out. I love constructive criticism. Doesn't hurt my feelings if my vibe doesn't groove with yours. You know, live and let live. I'm interested in everything from the promotion of the honeybee medicinals and all the products of the venom, the propolis, all that good stuff, to healing autoimmune disease, AIDS, cancer, all the cursed words that are spoken over people and BS diagnoses, and I'm with you. You can heal. You can heal from chronic conditions. That's my specialty. Easiest way to connect with me probably right now is at Facebook. I have a page that's called Texas Soap Factory. I have another page that just went up. It's Rebel Healer and hashtag Rebel Healer. And I can go into that another time, where that name comes from and Hurricane Dory, but it's all in good fun, and just calling out, you know, where the calling is for my journey. Again, Jordan, thank you so much, and want to connect with you again soon. And love your show, and we'll continue to support it.
Well, that's most appreciated. And you're so welcome for everything. It's just what I live is authenticity, genuineness, and providing value where I can. Obviously, it's nice to be financially compensated for, and that happens in so many different ways all the time for me that I really don't even worry about it. I know that I'll be taken care of. So thank you for that. And listeners, I really enjoyed providing these types of consultations. I get really passionate and excited. We cuss a lot here on Piercing the Veil, but you will find that many anthropological studies have been done that show that people that are not afraid of their reputation are people who are willing to cuss frequently, in a way that's, you know, workable, not just randomly. Those people are a lot more trustworthy than people that refrain and try to adhere to social conventions, if you will. So you guys take that for what it's worth. And until next time, pierce the veil and the truth will reveal itself. Thank you so much, Dory. We'll see you next time. Contribute anytime you like. Call in any show that you want, okay?
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. And we should have David and Ed on as soon as we can find a slot to do that, okay? Appreciate it, everybody. Goodbye.